Am I all set with the microphone? Check. You're supposed to raise your hand. Okay, well, as the last speaker, and I repeat, last speaker, because there were contributed talk, wonderful contributed talks, but if you wanted to talk, then you had to write your name before now. So as the last speaker, it is, my pleasure to thank the organizers, the other organizers for including me, and Fields Institute for their wonderful organization that made me quite useless. Well, apart from the belting. And, thank the all the speakers and the participants. It has been a wonderful workshop. Okay, and... Okay, so when you're finished with your name tag, you need to read it to remember who you are, and you leave it at the door there. Mm-hmm. And if you need a cab to go to the wherever you're going, you can phone at the front desk. They have a number there. And there was something else. Okay, and there was something else. I forgot. Okay, and I should start with my talk. And I'll thank Fields also for this wonderful presentation device. I could let my inner child free for... this talk. Okay, so I'm talking about duality and exponential graphs. And not to scare you, I started with this, the cube. Everybody knows what that is. Okay, formal definition here. Vertices, all functions from Zn to 0, 1. And two of these are adjacent if they differ in exactly one coordinate. Okay, and this is not scary yet. Look, wonderful theorem. The cube is bipartite. Perhaps you knew this already. I'm not sure. I think Shapiro could have proved this first, or otherwise we'll credit it to Yarick again. Okay. And I'll go into the proof of this, not in detail. I'll show you that the algorithm that is used in the proof. Here it is. So there's an algorithm in the proof. You input n, the dimension, and the vertex of Qm, and you add all the digits. And then you output red if the sum is even, and else you output blue. So to make a proof out of this, you have to prove that the adjacent vertices will receive different colors. I'll leave it to you as an exercise. Okay. What we'll look at here is what does this algorithm do? It works in polynomial time, in n. It is not an algorithm to two-color the Qn, because to two-color Qn, you have to run it 2 to the n times, which is exponential in n. So this is a polynomial algorithm that inputs one vertex of Qn and outputs its color. Okay, polynomial algorithm to color only one vertex. Okay. Well, if you think about it, you could just, well, if you only want to color one vertex, well, you just output red all the time. Okay, and if you're selling your algorithm to a government agency, this is the way to go. Okay, but if your client will make some verification, they'll try it on adjacent vertices of some Qm, and they'll say, "Whoa, it's red. It doesn't color properly." Well, this algorithm has some value after all. The cube is an exponentially large vertex with 2 to the n vertices. Okay, these vertices have succinct description as n string. Okay, and it is bipartite. So, and there is this polynomial algorithm to input one vertex and output its color. Okay, and are there others like this? And this is where this talk starts. Part one, okay. Okay, the graph, I'll call it Rn, defined by Elzar and Sauer when they proved Sedet-Nimitz conjecture for four colorable graphs. Okay, it doesn't look as cute as the cube here. This is not a faithful description, but it's not as cute. Okay, starts well like the cube. Vertices are functions from Z to X. Okay, I'll get bigger ears for next time. Okay. Vertices from Z 2n plus 1 to 0, 1, 2. Aha. So it could stop there, but I add a condition. Okay. F of 0 should be different from F of 1. Why? Because I tell you so. And F, second condition is more intricate. F of I... and f of I plus 2. They could be the same or they could be different in general. And, well, 2n plus 1 plus 2, well, 2n plus 2 is 1. Okay, there's an addition in here. They could be equal or different. If you count the number of times that they are different, you should get an even number. And why? Because I tell you so. Okay. And the adjacency is this. Two of these functions are adjacent if for all I, f of I is different from g of I plus 1, and g of I is different from f of I plus 1. This rings a bell from the talk from Jan von Jock. So this is actually a subgraph of the exponential graph odd cycle C2n plus 1 to the power of K3. Okay, but I've just taken special vertices, so it is a subgraph, but adjacency comes from exponential graph. Okay, so it is a bit like the cube with the vertices are essentially these function, and adjacency is defined by some rule. Okay, and we get the same theorem again. Rn is bipartite. I really let my inner child loose on this one. Okay, and so this will look into the proof as well. Okay, so proof. Okay, you don't see anything here. Okay. The proof is different. I don't present an algorithm. Instead, I go by contradiction. Suppose there is an odd cycle in Rn, like this. Okay. Then what happens? Lemma 1. Count the number of i's such that fi of 0 is different from fi plus 2 of 0. Okay. 2n plus 1 plus 2 is 0 here, okay? You'll get an odd number. Why is that? Well, it's because of... okay. This condition, okay? The even here. And by the way, try this with PowerPoint. Okay, so this is not obvious at all. This evenness condition here was put in, well, first to make sure that there's no loop in the graph, and which is not obvious. Elzar and Sauer worked a lot from that for that, and they worked a lot also to prove this lemma one. If there is this condition, then this count should be odd. Okay? Lemma 2. There's another way to count exactly the same thing. Instead of counting the number of times that fi of 0 is different from fi plus 2 of 0, you can count the number of times that fi of 0, fi plus 1 of 0, and fi plus 2 of 0 are all different. So 0, 1, 2 in some order. Okay? Because this count is odd, this will be odd as well. And if it's odd, we're happy, because if it's odd, it cannot be 0. It has to be at least 1. Okay? So there is some fi, fi plus 1, fi plus 2, such that fi of 0, fi plus 1 of 0, fi plus 2 of 0. Here they are. They're all the values. One push. Which one? Oh, it's gone. Great. Okay. So, where does fi plus 1 of 1 go? Okay, it has to be different from this because of definition of adjacency. It has to be different from this because of adjacency also. It has to be different from this. That's why I was fussy and put in this condition. Okay, so can it be 0, 1, 2? And that's a contradiction. Okay, therefore this hypothesis, there was an odd cycle is absurd, and this ends the proof. I should have written contradiction, but you're old enough to see contradictions yourself. And to attempt an algorithm, okay, Rn is a exponential graph, roughly 3n over 3 to the 2n plus 1 over 6 vertices. These vertices have a succinct representation, and now we know it is bipartite. Okay? So I give you one vertex. How do you color it? Well, there's no odd cycle. So if you color the whole thing and look at the color of your vertex, then you have it. And you could use deterministic things to be okay, but you've used exponential time and exponential space. Okay? This is slightly better, but not much better. I think I can do it in exponential time and polynomial space, where I had a pen. Okay. So first, I'll start with this G, which is lexicographically the smallest vertex in there. Okay. And from there, I'll go up until I reach the smallest G lexicographically, which is reachable from F. I think I can do that in polynomial space. Yeah, the graph is very disconnected, so I had to do that. So I'll find this smallest G in the connected component of F. Okay, I color G red. Okay, to determine the color of F then, I look if F is reachable from G in Rn squared, relational squared. So there's an edge between two vertices if there's a path of length 2. Okay, if it is, then it should have the same color, red, and else it is blue. So this is a algorithm polynomial space, I think, but exponential time, okay? There's no polynomial algorithm known to color one vertex of this graph, okay? Well, you could always output red, but it's the same objection as before. And there's possibly no point in this talk. Okay, if there is a point, then possibly the point is that this is an interesting question and a good problem. Can you find a good algorithm for this, or prove that none exists, or whatever? Or possibly one other possible point, well, the one I'm most confident about, what did we use here? this old Koenig theorem. A graph is bipartite if and only if it has no odd cycles. Okay? or in modern way, K2, the target graph for bipartite graph, has a bounded width with 2. There is a set of obstructions like this described, yes. The exponential, probably exponential. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure. Well, my algorithm worked. You added up the coordinates. Mm-hmm. Can I speak now? Okay. So, well, in modern terms, this has width 2, and if you listen to Benoit's excellent talk, once you have this data log algorithm describing the obstructions, these CSP people will try to do better. But what they call better is writing the program in a fragment of data log, linear data log, symmetric data log, at the expense of making the obstructions more difficult to describe. But the program is simple, so this is good for some things. Here, oh yeah, it is a function from 0 up to 2n to 0, 1, 2. Okay, so well, a value of 1, so it will be a vector of 2n plus 1 entries. Okay, all these entries are 0, 1, or 2. No, the input is one vertex, so one vector like this.
No, the input is one vertex and the function f.
The one vertex is a function f. Okay, f0 is one vertex in Rn. Okay, f0 is a vector with 2n plus 1 entries. Okay, it's a polynomial size input. Well, I'm talking about the problem. Where was it? This input is polynomial size. Okay, polynomial in n. Okay, you input f, which is a vector with 2n plus 1 coordinates. That is polynomial in n. Okay, and there's a 3 to the 2n plus 1 of these possible inputs. Zero, one, well, here was it. Here it was. Zero, one, zero, 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 zero. Actually, if you use only two values, then it will be an even function, and you make sure that the first two are distinct, and it is in Rn. So, that one should be red. But what about 0, 2, 0, 0, 2, 0, 0, 0, 0, 2, and continue like that. Should it be red or blue? Is it the smallest in its component? And is it at even distance or odd distance to the smallest in its component? Okay, now where was I? Wait a minute. Okay, yeah, I was here. Okay, so what I like of this bounded width problem is that The obstructions are easy to describe. They are the good old odd cycles. Okay? So, so the possible point of this talk is that if you have a set of obstruction that is easy to describe in some vague way, then perhaps you can prove homomorphisms for exponential graphs that way. And part two is actually a second example of this. This is part two. My inner child. Well, your own inner child plays with Microsoft Windows and some comic characters to say that you save your document well. And okay, my inner child is different. So probably yeah. We're forced to do it. Okay. So delta. If you've seen Jan van Jek's talk, you'll see what is delta. And if you haven't, I'll repeat it. Okay. TM, transitive tournament. Okay. K3, I'll explain exponentiation. And here I do it once and twice. So it is a doubly exponential graph. It starts very ugly. There is a triangle in there. Induced by the constant function, and the rest, the whole of it, it goes all over the world, covers the world, out the solar system. It's a big graph. Okay. Okay. So I'll have to explain what is a graph first. Okay. The delta here is defined in this way. Delta is a construction that takes a graph and makes a new graph here. Takes G and makes delta of G. Arcs in G will become vertices of delta G. Consecutive arcs in G will mean a vertex, an arc in between corresponding vertices in delta G. Okay. So, for example, this is T4, transitive tournament with four vertices. And if you apply delta, then you have these three arcs, then these two, and then that one, which is isolated. Okay. This was a four chromatic digraph. For chromatic number of a digraph, I just ignore the orientation and color it normally. Okay. If I apply delta, then chromatic number goes down to 2. Okay, this is bipartite. Okay, and this was this theorem which we can credit to Yarick if we want. Okay, the chromatic number of delta of G is about the logarithm of the chromatic number of G. Okay. And what I'll do, delta k means I've iterated delta k times composition. Okay, so the chromatic number of this will be logarithm, this k, this is composition of chromatic number. You can get very high number, but you have to start with 2 to the 2 to the 2 to the tower, k tower, and the chromatic number you want at the top. So this is the delta. We're halfway there. Now, exponential graph. More. Here. Okay. This is the definition of k to the g. Okay. Vertices are all functions from vertex set of g to vertex set of k. And you put an arc between two of these functions if some special rule is satisfied, whenever there was an arc from U to V in G, there should be an arc from F of U to G of V in K. Okay. Okay, so this is a construction. It was in Yan. So if you've heard it two times, perhaps you start to understand it. Or if you're quick, perhaps you get it right away. Or you've seen it. Or you're totally confused. But that's also normal. I've color-coded. So I'm using arrows for one, two meanings here, and a third meaning here, the two. And I'll add a fourth meaning. So this is a... the purpose of exponential graphs. There is a homomorphism from G to times H to K, if and only if there is a homomorphism from H to K to the G. So starting from this, you could work back what the K to the G should be. Okay. Basic properties here. Okay. G always admits a homomorphism from K to the K to the G. Okay. But then it stops there. K to the G is equivalent to K to the K to the K to the G. Okay. So, which means that by now you know what the TN is, transitive tournament, that's easy. You know what delta K is, that's R graph iterated two times. I've taken an exponential graph, just defined, and I do it again. And my theorem now. If you have this, K3 to the K3 to the delta K of Tn, it is homomorphically equivalent to K3 union delta K of Tn. And I'll prove this, but the hard part is filtering to find the non-trivial parts of this proof. Okay, because some parts are trivial. Delta K of Tn admits a homomorphism here. Well, this is just this property, which is easy. K3. There's a copy of K3 induced by the constant maps from here to here. So this arrow going to the right is totally trivial. Okay. The other arrow is sometimes trivial. If delta K of Tn is three chromatic, then all of this admits a homomorphism here, a three coloring, okay? Which means K3 to the this to the delta K of Tn, this has a proper coloring in it, which is a loop, okay? So the top here is essentially a loop. K3 to the loop, that's K3 as well, okay? So it is still easy when delta K of Tn is trichromatic. If you don't want delta K of Tn to be trichromatic, you take n to be 2 to the 2 to the 2 k times to the 4, at least. Okay, and then you might get something non-trivial to prove, but you still get easy things to prove. Yeah, I've changed my representation a bit. Okay, components of K3 to the K3 to the delta K of Tn. We know that, K3 to the delta K of Tn, this is a K3, the constant map, plus other functions, ugly already. Okay, and you take this graph, which is K3 to the delta K of Tn, and you assign to each vertex 0, 1, or 2. Okay? So what happens? If you repeated a color here, okay, 0, 0, okay, map this to inside K3, map it to the repeated color, 0. Okay? Here, 1 is repeated, okay, you map it to K3. Here, 0 is repeated, you map it to K3. If these two are to be adjacent, then this color, one, should be different from this and this. This should be different from this to this. So the repeated color here cannot be repeated here. I think I made a mistake in there. Yeah, I shouldn't have put a one there, but okay. But you can color these vertices with repeated colors here in this way. What remains uncolored, not matched, is these things. 0, 1, 2 appear on the triangle. If you want to find a neighbor of this, then the value here cannot be 1, cannot be 2. It has to be 0. Value here can be 0 or 2. It has to be 1. Here it has to be 2. So it has to be the same permutation, the same coloring here, using all three colors. And all over that component, it has to be the same permutation all the time. Okay. So a component like this will try to map it to delta k of tn. How will we find a homomorphism? Well, you can if you can. I won't. Okay. What I'll do is prove that none of the obstructions of delta k of tn, none of the obstructions can map into that component. Okay, and for this again, we need to know how these obstructions look like. Okay, the obstructions look like this. Okay, there is this. It is a path going from height 0 to height n minus k. First vertex should be the only one at height 0. Last vertex, the only one at height n minus k. And once you reach height h, then you're forever afterwards at height h minus k or above. Okay, so once you reach a height, you cannot go too low. Okay, so this comes, we knew the obstructions for Tn, that is the path with n arcs. Okay, when we apply delta, we know construction with Jan van Yuk, the Spruing construction to derive the obstructions for the corresponding, and we apply it n times, and so this way we can characterize the obstructions in this way. Okay, and what else will I use? Special vertices of the exponent k3 to the delta delta k of tn, okay, it will be a three-parametered family of nice functions, okay, fchl. For c comes from coordinate, okay, 0 to k. H, that will be the height which corresponds to a height in tn from height 1 to height n, and L, C was taken already, L is here, label or color, but the C was already taken. Okay, so how is this family of special vertices, why am I insisting, you don't need to remember this, but, well, nice simple functions that take only two values, L or L plus 1, okay, FCHL of this is a k plus 1 tuple. It is a vertex of this. The vertices of delta Tn are arcs, so couple. Okay. The arcs are a consecutive couple, so you can merge them and make a triple. So the vertices of delta 2 are triples, vertices of delta 3 are quadruples, and so on. So you can represent vertices in there, this way, okay, and you apply this condition. You put the value of f at this vertex should be L if this condition is satisfied, and L plus 1 otherwise. So you can encode the constant maps are special functions. Okay, and they can be in two ways. Okay, perhaps this condition is trivial, it's always satisfied. So You put L everywhere. Or perhaps this condition is impossible if H is too small. Okay, so you put L plus 1 everywhere. So constant maps are there. And what happens? So now we're ready for the proof. Okay, so I'm not defining a homomorphism. So I suppose that there is this path obstruction. I know its shape. Okay, so the F J's here are elements of K3 to the K3 to the delta K of Tm. So they are functions from my big snake to 0, 1, 2. Okay? And we know how this special function, these special functions are mapped in this component, let's say 0, 1, 2. Okay? On the next one, it forces other special functions to take special values. And this forces, okay, because of this adjacency, other special functions to take other special values. And it continues along the path, okay, you have, it's always by threes, L equals 0, 1, 2. You get special functions that take special values, okay, three of them at a time, and it forces other special functions. And it continues all the way along the path, okay. At the end of the path, the special functions with special values are the constants again, but aha, they're forced to the wrong values. Okay, this was impossible in this connected component. The these vertices always had the same values. So this is the contradiction. This path cannot map into this component. So this component will map into delta K of Tn. So there, I have a second example of using bounded width and good knowledge of the paths to find existence of homomorphism between exponential graphs in this way. And I don't know if I have time. Okay, to explain why I did this. Okay, so, well, how do the two parts connect in purpose instead of methods? So theorem, oh my God. Oh, here it is. Okay. First theorem. Rn is bipartite. Okay. So that was by Elzar and Sauer. It's their theorem to prove that if you have a tree coloring of G times H, then you should be able to find a tree coloring of G or H. Okay. This is not how Elzar and Sauer wrote it. But this is the way that Jack and Min said that it should be stated, because it makes things simpler. Okay. So how is this theorem used in there? Well, you have G and H. Okay. Categorical product. Vertices are categorical product. You put an edge here. If there's an edge here and here, it will become this x here. Okay, so first part, find an odd cycle in G. Okay, if there's none, G is bipartite and you can tree color it. Okay, if things go bad, you do find an odd cycle in G. second step, do the same in H. Okay, find an odd cycle, otherwise you two color. Okay, and once you're there, look at, well, this cycle times cycle. Okay, well, just this cycle, okay, this and a vertex here. Okay, look at colors here. Okay, and count the number of times that color and color of vertex at distance 2 are different. This will be even or odd. If it is odd, you switch factors. You go to the other one. But one of the two factors, you will get even. Okay? So it's starting to look like vertices of Rn. It's not all vertices of Rn. Okay? So now, if you have this even, it means that you will three-color H. How? Well, there are vertices like this where the two colors are different. 1 and 0, and perhaps 1 and 2, that's allowed. Okay. Others where they could be the same. Let's say 0, 0, because there's no edge this way. Okay. If it is 0, 0, then this vertex, you color it 0. Okay, and it remains color along all of H, okay, H connected, remains color where this color is different from this one on this fixed edge, okay, let's say vertex 0 and vertex 1 here, okay, but this is essentially a subgraph of Rn, which is bipartite. Okay, so you can two color what's not colored yet by this simple rule. Okay, first color you'll use this side. Okay, and second color, if you have something here 2, 0, you'll use the other side. Okay. If there is an edge from here to here, the colors have to be different. If there's one from here to here, colors have to be different, and colors have to be different. So that's the output, that is a three coloring of H in this case. So corollary of this, if the minimum of chromatic number of G, chromatic number of H is greater than or equal to 4, then chromatic number of G times H greater than or equal to 4. Okay, if you take 2, 4 chromatic graphs and take their product, it is still 4 chromatic. Okay, 1984. Next step in there, you'd like to prove if minimum of chromatic number of G, chromatic number of H greater than or equal to 5, then same thing here, greater than or equal to 5. Okay. This one was proved way before the BlackBerry was even preconceived or whatever. So with all the modern technology, we should be able to jump one more. We cannot, and we're much more modest than this. Okay. If the minimum is greater than or equal to n, then the chromatic number of the product should be greater than or equal to 5. Okay? Does there exist an N like this? We don't know. Perhaps it never happens. You can take a zillion chromatic graphs, take their product, and it's four colorable. And now, directed graphs enter the picture. There exists n such that if minimum of the chromatic number of G and chromatic number of H is greater than or equal to n. Okay, I've just put arrows to show that they're directed. Then, chromatic number of G cross H greater than or equal to 3. Okay. This is a similar question for directed graph, smaller chromatic number, but this is not known. If this is true, then this is true. Okay, and it is true for all values here, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. You can always find values here. You can find corresponding n. If this is false, then with 9 here, it is false. And all values above 9, it is false. 10. Okay, which means I have 2 minutes. Okay. Oh no, plus 5 minutes because I was not doing my talk in the beginning. And Jack interrupted. Okay. Okay, so now K3 to the D. Okay, class of directed graphs here. This is the set of all digraphs of the form K3 to the G. G is a digraph. Well, D is a class of script D is a class of digraphs, and K3 to the D is the set of all digraphs like this. Okay, and you put an order on there. Okay, so A less than or equal to B. Okay, A and B should be should come from here, so they should be that way. If there is a homomorphism. They're still digraphs. So if there is a homomorphism, this is a relation, you just rewrite it in another way. And the advantage here, I won't surprise you that this is a preorder. You quotient it and you get an order. And a very nice order. K3 to the D. So now I mean the quotiented with the obvious quotient here, is a Boolean lattice. Okay. All the elements here are ugly, look like snake with little bits, but the whole structure of the whole thing is very nice. And this helps here, okay? This becomes obvious how to prove this. Take A atom of K3 to the D and N equals the max of chromatic number of A chromatic number of K3 to the A works. Okay. Does there exist an N with this property? Well, just take an atom in there and you find a value N like this which makes the job. Okay. Atom is a minimum element above the minimum, which is K3. But wait a minute. Are there atoms in there? And this is where, well, if there are atoms, it would be nice. It would solve a nice old conjecture. Okay? If there are no atoms, then the Boolean lattice is dense. Okay? It is countable. It comes from countable family. There's only one optical isomorphism, dense countable lattice. Okay? And that's where the second theorem comes from. I think there is a natural order to... well, there are advantages to PowerPoint. I won't. Okay. Wait a minute. Oh, yeah, there it is. Oh my God. Here. Okay, so this what is what this theorem was for. With this, you can prove, in fact, that this is a dense Boolean lattice. So there was a purpose in doing this, but also I think the similarity of the methods was interesting and fitful. So now I've ended my talk. Thank you.